paramedic here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
In 2000, model Lourdes Gruart disappears. Her brother says that she told him she was leaving for Europe for a modeling job and left their shared apartment. But Lourdes doesn't have an active passport, nor has she told anyone else of her travel plans. In the 24 years since, Lourdes' disappearance has remained a mystery. This is her story.
Hi, I'm Vanessa.
And I'm Amy.
And you're listening to She Goes by Jane.
Hi, Vanessa.
Hi, Amy.
Vanessa, I wrote the opening to this so many times.
We couldn't decide?
I really could not decide how we were going to start this week. I'm going to do it a little bit differently because I think our missing woman, Lourdes Gruart, deserves it. So Lourdes was 46 years old when she went missing in 2000, though she would have hated for you to know that fact.
The age part?
Yes.
Yes.
A friend said, if that girl is still alive and she finds out that the papers printed her real age, watch out, because there's going to be a lawsuit. Instead, she told everyone she was 30, though I don't think many people believed her.
I'm 45 and I don't think I could pass for 30. It's one of those things though. Do I want to pass for a young looking 45 year old or would I want to look like a really old looking 30 year old?
Right. Like she was putting out there that she was in her 30s.
It wasn't funny, but also kind of cute.
It is. But also, I think it's kind of funny, but also once we get into it, I think it's going to feel a little bit sadder.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
So yeah. This is a sad, well, obviously it's a sad story, but.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think there's a lot of problems with the modeling industry, both mm-hmm. when she was modeling and now. And yeah, so her hiding her age is part of that.
Well, I don't think you mentioned she's a model yet.
Oh, no, I did not. So Lourdes is a model. Okay. So this is how I want you to picture Lourdes as we are going through our story, right? Because we usually talk about the poems after mm-hmm. and are behind the poems, but this is like was such a clear image to me when I was writing. So I want you to picture Lourdes. She is 5'9". Mm-hmm. She's thin but angular. She'd done like 1980s runways in Milan and Paris and Tokyo. But by the time she disappeared, she was living and working in New York City. And she would spend nights at, like, upscale hotel bars, like at the St. Regis. And she would start off with a glass of champagne on her evenings. And her friends would say that throughout her life, even during European modeling days, she did something similar. One said, a little white wine and a pack of cigarettes. Lourdes didn't eat. She perched. So, as we talk about her, I want everyone to picture her at the St. Regis's bar, which is a very famous bar. It's called the King Cole Bar. Like, it had guests like Salvador Dali, John Lennon, Marilyn Monroe. And one of the things about the King Cole Bar is it's got this Maxfield Parrish mural at the bar back. And it's of King Cole. And it's in these, like, bright blues and oranges. So picture Lourdes, this mm-hmm. incredibly beautiful woman, perched on her chair, swathed in black because, of course, Lourdes only wore black, like holding forth most evenings with a group of friends at the bar.
Perching.
Perching. Yes. She perched. So while we're picturing her, though, let's begin at the beginning of Lourdes's life. Like, I'm sharing her story chronologically. I restarted this so many times, like, what's the best way? Mm-hmm. And it's really, like, it's because, like so many of the other women that we talk about, like, Lourdes's life was so interesting. And her disappearance is only, like, such a small
right.
fragment of it, right?
Yeah. And most of the time when we have these discussions, I always feel like I'm having, like, a really great time talking about the woman.
Yes.
That sometimes I forget that she's about to disappear.
Yeah. So usually it's like you forget until I start mentioning
it. Yeah. And then you start, as soon as those dates come up, I'm like, oh, shit, that's right. This is not just the story of a woman. This is the story of a disappearance.
Yeah. And, you know, like, one difference, like, when we're talking about stories, very often when it involves the case of, like, say, like, a missing teenager, mm-hmm. like, I can feel that difference, like, that they didn't get to have these lives that we're,
right.
we're talking about, right? And Lourdes, like, you know, she's 46 when she went missing. Like, what would she be like today?
Right. Like,
24 years later.
But like you said, at 46, she's already like a well-established human being. Like her personality is there, her character, you know, like
yeah.
It sounds like she has a big personality. And like, and you're right, like with the 13, 14, 15-year-old girl, we don't know what her life is going to, would have been.
Yeah.
And that makes, it does make it really sad. And sometimes there's, like, we've talked about cases where I'm like, where are the rest of the pictures of her?
And they, like, they don't exist, right?
They don't exist.
Now, like, there are actually very few details about Lourdes from her childhood. So we are starting at the beginning, but, like, kind of working from very little things. And that's actually really interesting because, like, despite being a model and despite her successes in life, and that's actually one thing I want to emphasize is, like, she was successful. Lourdes's story got very little coverage over the years. So I want to give first huge recognition to the writer, Vanessa Gregoridis, whose article about Lourdes in New York Magazine is one of the few about her, her career, and her disappearance. And this episode would have been impossible without that resource, and we'll link it on our website. So what we do know about Lourdes's early life is that she was born in Havana, Cuba, and moved to the United States with her family when she was a child. Her parents, Mario and Lourdes, were some of the many Cuban immigrants who fled Cuba in the 1960s and 70s. Lourdes's father had already been in the United States before to get his degree, but the whole family moved to El Paso, Texas from Havana in 1960.
Oh, I was going to ask you earlier if Lourdes was actually her name. Mm-hmm. Or if it was like her modeling name, but she's named after her mom.
She is.
So that's very sweet.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think it's actually interesting because, like, what we have to give sort of context to what's going on at the time, like, her family is part of this, what's called the Golden Exile of Cubans. Like, in short, like, Fidel Castro is overthrown Cuba's leader, Batista, in 1959. And two things really happen. One, the relationship between Cuba and the United States, like, sours incredibly fast. And flights between the two countries end up being suspended in 1962. So there's this, like, small window of time in the early 60s where it's a bit easier to get out of Cuba.
Okay.
Well, easier for people who had the finances mm-hmm. to do so. And also those who had money or were thought to be loyal to Batista or who were anti-communist, like the Gruarts, they recognize that there was this radical shift that's going to take place. And they're like, we've got to get out of here quickly.
So it was like a really unique time when they actually could do that.
Yeah. So it's like that window was like very small, right? Mm-hmm. So the family ends up moving around through a few southern U.S. states, including Texas, North Carolina, and Alabama, before settling in Plantation, Florida. Lourdes was the oldest of four children. She was followed by two sisters and one brother, and I believe all of her siblings were born in the U.S. And there was a 15-year age gap between her and her youngest sibling, her brother, M.
Oh, we're just doing the initial?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, Lourdes, she's embracing American life from a pretty young age. Like, there's very few articles about her. There's just this really cute, like, listing of the different roles each kid got in their third grade class, which I kind of just love seeing. It's like this paper is running, like, these little things. And she, in her third grade class, she was the fire lieutenant.
For all those third grade fires.
Yes. She was prepared, right? But by the time she was a teenager, she was on the homecoming court and a cheerleader. Now, as I said, Lourdes was incredibly striking, but she was also tall. So by 14, she was already 5'7" and was, like, soon doing seasonal fashion shows in Florida where basically buyers would come and see the new fashions. Yeah, I stopped growing well before then. I never made it to 5'7".
You're laughing while looking at my 5'1" self. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I never really started growing.
Well, you got to 5'1".
I did get to 5'1".
Neither of us were meant for model life.
No.
No. Okay. So despite all of this, I'm not sure Lourdes necessarily saw modeling as a career. So I don't know what your awareness was in the wilds of Canada, Vanessa.
Okay.
But, like, I don't know, in the 90s, like, supermodels were kind of omnipresent. Like,
yes.
I mean, like, Cindy Crawford or Giselle or Kate Moss, yes. Right?
So we did see those in TV and magazines in Canada as well.
I mean, I was just visiting my Canadian family and I'm like, I don't know. It feels like they had a very different childhood than me.
Maybe.
I don't know.
I mean, I'm close to the border, so I might not have had as different.
I don't know.
But I mean, there are things that are different, definitely.
Right.
Yes.
Yes. But you do know Cindy Crawford. And
I do know who these people are.
Kate Moss, right?
Yes.
So they become like household names, right? Like,
right.
Yeah. So like you knew them in the 90s.
Yeah. Wasn't there like Nikki Taylor too or something like that?
I don't. Yeah, probably.
Yeah. There was a bunch of. Yeah.
Yeah. So they're definitely not the only ones. There's a bunch of them, right?
Yes.
Like, so like you could see an advertisement like, oh my God, Kate Moss was like everywhere. Like,
right.
Right. And you would see her photo and you would know, like, that's Kate Moss, right?
Mm-hmm.
And back in the 1980s and 90s, kind of magazine covers were predominantly using models instead of actresses. So, like, now, like, you see magazine covers and it's like an actress is usually on there.
Right.
But back in the 80s, there was often a divide between magazine models and runway models. So, different categories of modeling. But when Lourdes was coming of age, the idea of models as household names wasn't quite at the same level. Like, sure, there would be some recognizable models like Twiggy, for instance, but those were fewer. Those names weren't as recognized. Their faces weren't as recognized, right? Which is why it's probably not surprising that when she graduated high school, she went on to study international affairs at the University of South Florida. By the time she graduated college, though, the idea of modeling took hold. She'd been doing small fashion shows in Florida and keeping up with ballet, but she decided to pursue a modeling career and basically flew to New York when she was done college. And like many who are trying to make it in New York City, she was a restaurant hostess while trying to launch this career. Like, I took a historic tour in New York City like last summer, and it was like I was being led around by like an aspiring actress, right? So
was it this celebrity worked at this restaurant and this celebrity worked at this restaurant and the, yeah.
Yeah. Eventually, she decided she's going to have better luck in Milan. So she left New York City for Italy in 1983. Now, Italian fashion houses were having their own kind of shakeup in this era. Though Vogue Italia had opened up in Milan in 1961, Florence had been seen as the center of Italian fashion until the mid to late 1970s. But many of those big fashion houses left Florence for Milan only 6 years before Lourdes lands in Italy. And so you have all these major fashion houses that are trying to figure out their own angles in this era. And this comes not just with the clothing itself, but in how their models presented the clothes on the runway. So you have brands like Armani, who wanted to project this idea of fierce, feminine career woman, but giving them like an androgynous look. Mm-hmm. So the booking agencies were looking for women who could convey that. And at the time, you also had Versace, who Like, they're looking for international recognition as a glamorous brand. And one of their tactics was to find models from different countries that could project that, right? Mm-hmm. And sell them internationally. So they're really going to take part in getting international models, but also making them internationally famous. So in short, like, this will later become the first supermodels, but we're not quite there yet in our history. So this is the culture that Lourdes lands in when she gets to Milan. She gets a place to stay and gets to work, getting signed relatively quickly to the agency called Why Not?
Is that the name of it?
It is.
And that's in Italy? Milan. In Milan, and it's called Why Not. In English, or is it?
Yeah. And it still exists.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, why not?
Why not?
And it seems like a very 1970s name.
Yeah. But also just like having these English words and like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this really accelerates Lourdes's career. She begins working on runway shows in Milan for brands like Mazzoni, Armani, Valentino, and Fendi. But as Gagardidis reports in her piece on Lourdes, despite the glamorous sounding occupation, Lourdes and the other models aren't necessarily making a lot. She might be only paid $200 for a runway show.
That, even by 80s standards, sounds like a very disappointing amount.
It is such a shocking amount. So I'm going to say I was curious, and you'd be surprised then to learn it has not gotten better.
Seriously?
No. So most beginning models are being paid just $200 to $1,000 for a show. Or sometimes, I know you're going to love this, they're compensated in brand clothing rather than payment, right?
Mm. So the brand clothing should be like a bonus that comes with your good check.
Yes.
Yeah.
So apparently women who are models who are considered supermodels can make like $220,000 a show. But like, if you think about like how few shows you can really book in a year, plus travel costs, plus the cost of maintenance, like.
Yeah. This is where something that also has always annoyed me comes into play, where I'm like there might be people listening, hopefully not our listeners, because I know you're all very cool, but people seeing something like this and being like, oh, well, they're basically just being paid to be a pretty face. But like, they're working out. They're like trying to keep themselves looking nice, which is actually like a lot of work.
Yeah.
They're flying around. They never get to be home. If they get famous, they're giving up like a lot of their like
privacy,
right?
Yeah.
They're putting themselves at risk of like creepy stalkers. Mm-hmm. All for $200.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, to me, that sounds like a very small amount to basically trade your life in.
For
something for that. That's a completely abnormal life.
Yeah. You know? And so it's like such a low amount in the 1980s. And then it's like, it didn't get any better.
It didn't get any better.
It's like writers. Like, writers were paid more in like 1970s, 1980s than they're paid now for things. It's just.
Yeah.
Like, we're heading in the wrong direction.
Yeah. Right? It's sad.
Yeah. So basically, she is barely scraping by in Milan, but it also seems pretty typical for models then and now. And so she isn't saving a lot of money. She's spending it quickly. Because as a friend told Gagardidis for her article, whatever was hip, whatever was hot, fierce, whatever, Lourdes had to have it. And so there's a few things going on with Lourdes at this point in her time in Italy. First, she's spending her time with other models. Apparently, they'd all go out to eat at this restaurant in Milan that would actually feed them for free. But Lourdes wouldn't eat.
That's the time to eat, girl. You get your food while it's free if you're getting $200 for a show.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, this is very disordered.
Yeah.
Eating, right. And then basically, as the night got later, like, they would just kind of like hang out at this restaurant until essentially like Italian playboys would like show up, pick them up, bring them to various like clubs around Milan, and they'd go dancing like all night. And like, a lot of them were using drugs, particularly cocaine. But apparently Lourdes did steer clear of it because she had a sinus issue.
Mm-hmm. That's the best reason I've ever heard to steer clear of it. Like,
My sinuses are already a mess.
Yeah. But also, let's just do clear.
Yeah. So, like, honestly, like, I have never liked clubbing ever. Mm-hmm. Like, it sounds exhausting to me, but like, I'm guessing for Lourdes, this had to feel exhilarating to be young and in Milan and featured in these fashion shows. And at one point, she even moved to Paris and she's doing shows there. And while she's modeling, she's also dating. So apparently she had a particular affinity for wealthy Persian men, but she also dated the actor Gregory Peck's son, Tony, as well as the director Stan Dragotti, who had been married to the model Cheryl Teagues. A friend would say Lourdes wouldn't just date anyone, though. It had to be someone with money and a name.
That's where I think I went wrong in my life.
Things we should have been looking for.
Right. Instead, we're just looking for love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. So, like, despite her success, right? Despite the fact that she's dating the types of men that she deemed worthy, like, there's a darker side to what she's experiencing, you know, besides the dark sides that I've already mentioned. Mm-hmm. Now, like, at this time in Milan, runways were just really starting to feature Black models, so the percentage of Black models was extremely low. It still is, actually. But many of those Black models in the 1980s Italian runways are still names we recognize today, like Naomi Campbell, mm-hmm. who I believe at one time had the same agency as Lourdes.
Okay.
But models like Iman, Grace Jones, and some of those women actually become her close friends. But Lourdes actually was herself hiding her ethnicity. Many of her close friends weren't actually aware that she was Cuban. She would often just say she was a Spanish princess. And when she thought about how she wanted to be known, it was like those like Midwest white American girls who were modeling, like Christy Brinkley or Cheryl Teagues. In Gregoriadis's piece, one of her friends said, "All Lourdes's friends were Black divas, yet she always fancied herself a blonde, blue-eyed, corn-fed type girl." And like, I just have so much to say about this, but like, Lourdes is trying to hide this part of her identity, but even more importantly, making it, it's like an industry issue, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's not enough space for diversity. Like, they're not making space for diversity.
Could it have been like an 80s problem too?
It's actually not, because if you look at the like statistics for Hispanic and Latin representation in modeling, it's still extremely
really
low.
Okay, so I thought that would improve, like, each decade. Like, we would have more and more.
Yeah. I mean, it probably has improved in some measures, but okay. The vast majority of models who are booked are still white.
Okay.
Yeah. Hmm. Now, like I said, the 1980s basically gives birth to the supermodel as we understand them today. And before anyone can correct me, yes, the term was used before the 1980s. And no, Janice Dickinson didn't coin the term. But there's this really huge push and widespread recognition of models in the 80s. And many of those women, like I said, were Lourdes's friends. And while Lourdes did have, by any measure, a successful career, I mean, she was walking runways worldwide, mm-hmm. like, she never had that level of success. She wasn't household name recognizable.
So she more like runway model, where some of the others might have been getting those magazine covers we were talking about and stuff like that.
Yeah, because there's like a shift that does happen, right? Like, in the 1980s, like, things started to change in the modeling industry, particularly the late 1980s. Like, first, like, runway models start being replaced with what had been considered magazine models. Okay, so if you think about, say, Versace's desire to be globally recognized, you can see why replacing straight up runway models with these cover models who mm-hmm. might be more recognizable would be important. So it's in the late 1980s and 90s that, like, the women who will become known as the Big Five. This is, I like how my research takes me in new places. The Big Five were like starting explosive careers. And so that's Christy Turlington, Naomi Campbell, Claudia Schiffer, Cindy Crawford, and Linda Evangelista.
Mm.
They then become the Big Six when you add in Kate Moss. And so suddenly it feels like they're everywhere. They're in ads, they're on runways, they're in music videos, right? And Lourdes hates Linda Evangelista.
Just Linda Evangelista?
Well, specifically Linda.
Why specifically her?
Like, she kind of sees Linda Evangelista is having like a similar look to her own.
Okay.
So I guess she kind of sees like her own inability to reach this type of like exclusive success as Evangelista because Evangelista is already there.
So in her head, there's no room for two women that look kind of
similar. No.
Even though some of the others that you mentioned kind of looked similar to each other.
Yes. Well, okay. I mean,
Yeah.
I mean, the modeling industry honestly sounds very tough.
Well, yeah.
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 So apparently, like, she even, like, copies Evangelista's look and, like, cuts her hair short and, like, yeah. Which I want to point out, like, I mean, imitation doesn't help anyone, right? Like, rather than, like, evolving into your own look or, like, distinguishing yourself, right?
Yeah. Like, you can borrow little bits here and there, but be yourself.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the other thing is that at this point, Lourdes was aging out of modeling. We still have limited representation in modeling in terms of diversity and in terms of age. And the models then and now experience ageism in their careers. So for Lourdes, who is certainly not a supermodel, this really meant that she wasn't getting jobs like she had been. And to be clear, she was not thrilled about this. In fact, she actually tries to buoy her career along a bit longer by including photos of the model Patricia Hartman in her portfolio instead of her own.
She's passing off the photos
of Patricia? Of a younger model.
How much younger?
So Patricia's born in 1972 and Lourdes was born in, like, what, 1954? So we're at an 18-year age gap.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did they look that much alike?
I mean, looking at them now, you can kind of see some resemblances. I'm not sure how this would work, but...
Right. I feel like you would give that in, then you show up to a job and they'd be like, nope, not you.
Yeah.
Kind of like when people use their headshots from 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And then you show up and... Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're trying to like... actually find the person and you can't because it's not a good representation.
Yeah, I mean, I make fun of my husband because, like, he never changes his picture on social media.
Oh my gosh, no.
Right? And I'm like, dude. Right? And, at some point I was like, look, like, it's not that he looks so much younger than me. It's that he just hasn't
shared. That's really funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. According to social media, though, he is, like, 15 years younger than you are.
Yes. Yes. Okay, so all of that is going on. And basically in 1988, Lourdes has to come back to New York City and regroup, right? She has limited funds because, as we know, she was criminally underpaid mm-hmm. and also had been keeping up appearances by purchasing the latest fashions, right? So essentially she couch surfs and stays with other models that she had met basically in European shows.
We'll be back in a moment.
But in 1989, just before the Met Ball, she met Robert, or Bob, Marx. Now, if that name, Marx, rings a bell, it's because he's the son of Barbara Blakely and Robert Oliver. But Barbara married Zeppo Marx of the Marx Brothers.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And when Bob was young, Zeppo tried to give him his last name. But his biological dad, Robert Oliver, objected. And so Zeppo couldn't. But then later on, Bob starts using Marx. So that's
complicated. Wait, what? What is happening now? Okay. So what?
Yeah. So basically, Bob Marx.
So is Zeppo Marx the father of the kid?
Stepfather.
Stepfather, but he wants to give okay.
Give his last name.
So it was Barbara's second marriage was to Zeppo Marx, and he was like, "You take my name," and the kid was like, "No," and then he did.
Well, the kid was like, "Yes," but the kid's dad was like, "No."
Okay, yeah. so he stepped in more as the father,
yes,
than Robert Oliver was. Okay,
okay, but then things don't work out between Barbara and Zeppo, and Barbara's. Basically is the last wife of Frank Sinatra.
Okay. And now is her son still Keeping marks as...
Yes.
Okay. So, okay. So that's the happy part of this story. So she's not really good in relationships, but her son found a really great dad in Zeppo Marks. No?
Yes. Yes.
Is that like, can we say that's the happy part of all of these failed marriages? I mean,
it sounds like Zeppo Marks did really like, yes, his stepson.
Wait, I forget why we're talking about him.
Okay. Because...
Where are we going?
We took a journey. Okay. So Lourdes meets Bob Marks. At a party before the Met Gala in 1989.
Okay.
Okay.
So she meets Bob.
Yes. And they start a relationship. Okay. So Lourdes and Bob are together. We good?
We good. And does Bob have money?
Well, okay.
And is he famous? Because we like the famous men with the money.
Okay.
Or at least the kids of famous people, right?
So Bob himself is not famous, right? Like, he is well connected.
Okay.
Zeppo had passed away and he actually didn't leave much money, but he did leave enough for Bob to finish his education to become a lawyer, and Bob became an entertainment lawyer. Okay. But Bob is also the stepson of Frank Sinatra.
Right.
Right. So
does that count?
I don't know if it does for Lourdes, right?
Right.
So Bob seems really smitten with Lourdes. They're dating. They date for about a year. They're flying by private jet to the Sinatra house in Palm Springs. He gave her a pair of Cartier earrings, right? But, like, it's not working out for Lourdes, because even though it's likely that Bob would inherit money from his mother, and I can tell you that that did happen,
mm-hmm.
like a lot of money, Lourdes wanted more than he had at the time, right?
Okay, so he doesn't have that money yet, and she's just like done with him.
Yeah, I mean, by any measure, he's well off, but not as well off, I think, as she wanted, right? So in Lourdes, like, kind of what I see is this like constant striving,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, she wants more out of life, wants more money, wants more position. Like, she wants that. And I think in some ways that can be off-putting
mm-hmm.
to people, or like hearing this story, or people who knew her in life. But like, I also like think we can care about someone even as they're like struggling through this, right? Like,
right. So the thing too with it is, a lot of the time when we talk about somebody after they disappear, we omit any of the parts of them that were not the most flattering.
Right.
Which I think does not form a full, like, human.
Right. Yes.
So then we end up with, like, this partial story of who the person was, only, like, the highlights. And then it leaves the rest of the people being like, okay, wow. Like, nobody's as good as these people are. But
mm-hmm.
we all have our issues.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's not this, it would be something else, right? Like,
yeah. So she's like any human. She's complicated and she's messy.
Right. Right.
And so his money is not enough for her.
Mm-hmm.
And so she talks about this with her friends. Basically, she doesn't think his pockets are deep enough, right? So despite these misgivings, like, Lourdes does anticipate that he's going to ask her to marry him. And again, the balance here seems to be that, like, she's sizing him up to kind of see if he's worthy,
mm-hmm.
right? But then this really surprising thing happens and he breaks up with her, like, which is not what she anticipated.
Right. Happening. And I know that we're here to talk about Lourdes,
mm-hmm.
and we want to, like, remember her and care for her. But also, good for Bob. Good for Bob. Like, he needed to get out of this relationship.
Right. Oh, yeah. So again, this is not something she anticipated. And she actually found herself trying to lure him back in. A friend told Gregoritis for her article that she'd say, "I'm going to wear this to such and such party and make Bob crawl."
Did it work?
Lourdes did not succeed.
She did not.
No. Now, as the 1980s is marching into the 1990s, Lourdes is also in an uncomfortable position in many ways. Like, so finding a wealthy and connected man was proving much harder than she thought, right? But so was finding work. So she had certainly been invited to industry parties and events, but that didn't translate into booking work as a model. At the same time, despite not being on like sturdy financial grounds herself, she was also picky about the things that she would book. So apparently she was contacted to do an ad for Coca-Cola for Spanish television, which she turned down because she didn't want to do work in Spanish, despite the fact it would have actually paid a decent amount of money. She also got a job as a fit model for John Anthony.
I don't know what that means. Ooh, the fit model.
But you...
I haven't actually... What is John Anthony?
John Anthony Tell is me a the designer. Whole thing. John okay. Anthony's a designer.
John Anthony's a designer. She's a fit model. So I'm going to guess it's something to do with like... He would put the clothes on her to see how they looked?
Yeah. So fit models are employed in a lot of fashion industries. Like, basically, it's like a woman who's determined, usually a woman, but there's also men who do fit modeling. You're determined to be like the correct size.
Okay, I've heard about that with jeans before. Yes. So that's what that's.
Yes, because that you okay. and I both read.
Yes.
Butts. This book called Butts, right?
A backstory.
Yes, which yes. is really great. And in that, they were talking about a fit model who did jeans and how jeans are made to fit this one woman.
One person.
And that was depressing.
It's so sad.
Yeah.
Because nobody is. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So she's working as a fit model.
Okay.
Now, the co-owner of this designer, John Anthony, his name is Scott Brooks. And he said that, like, honestly, Lourdes was kind of old school. She'd come in dressed up and made up, unlike a lot of other models at the time who are kind of strolling in jeans, right? And he also said that she was a wonderful person with a great sense of humor. And he seems like he really enjoyed working with her, which is interesting because, according to friends, Lourdes hated it. So she ended up quitting after 3 years with them because she wasn't included in the designer's runway shows. And that's really what she did like to do, right? And so that left her pulling together work where she could. She worked as a fit model for other designers, attended fittings, did ad work. Like, really, her career seemed to be kind of in free fall, and she definitely felt it. And again, this is not necessarily because she's doing something wrong. It's because she's in an industry that is incredibly ageist, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's when Lourdes starts having some regrets. It's now been years since she was in a relationship with Bob Marks. Okay, but during their time together, Muhammad Khashoggi, who is one of Bob's friends, had hit on her and she turned him down. Apparently, he had invited her to go to his place. Now, Muhammad might not be a name that is readily recognizable to everyone, but he's the son of Adnan Khashoggi, who is a Saudi arms dealer and businessman. Now, this guy, Adnan, was nicknamed the Great Gatsby of the Middle East and had been on Lifestyles of the Rich and the Famous. Perhaps most recognizable in their family is Dodi Fayed. Mm. He's the man who was with Princess Diana when they died in 1997. So Muhammad and Dodi were cousins.
Okay.
There's really not an easy way to say this, but it sounds like Lourdes became obsessed with Muhammad.
Okay.
So friends say that she would drag them shopping, looking for clothes to capture his interest, and she would use her evenings at those upscale hotel bars to, like, basically plot how she's going to catch him.
So she initially turned him down, but then she becomes, like...
Well, then she's like, that was dumb.
Okay.
Right? Like, he has
everything
that I want, right?
Right.
So she even starts calling her aunt basically to have her fortune read in regards to the potentiality of a relationship between her and Muhammad. Now, her aunt ends up saying, like, yes, like, he wants to be with you. He loves you. But there's someone standing in your way.
Do we know who it is?
Well, yeah. So for some reason, Lourdes decides that this unidentified person that her aunt is mentioning is her roommate, Lourdes's roommate that she had at the time.
Like, okay.
She became convinced that this woman, her roommate was practicing Santeria and doing rituals to keep Lourdes and Muhammad apart.
Is that a realistic assumption?
I don't get that impression, no.
Okay.
So she eventually, though, forces this woman to move, but it doesn't, like, decrease her paranoia or bring her closer to forming a relationship with Muhammad.
Like, okay. So is he just, like, not interested anymore at this point?
It's, like, uncertain from reading the articles and what resources there are available, like, how much communication there actually was between the two of them. Like, it honestly sounds like a lot of this is built in her head.
Right. What if she had gone home with him that first night and he would have been a horrible person? Like, it doesn't, I don't know. Does she know enough about him to be, like, obsessing?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, she just feels like she missed this chance, right? Okay. And so she becomes dedicated to doing her own rituals. Like, her friend, makeup artist Danielle, said that the year before she went missing, she brought him to the Bronx to find a Santeria practitioner to perform a love spell. And there are other friends who said that she was going to this practitioner, like, weekly.
Okay.
Now, a friend said, Lourdes wasn't always the easiest person to get along with. She invented the word high maintenance, but once this Muhammad thing started, she became unbearable.
So people in her life are starting to, like, be like, whoa.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, she even became worried that her friend Danielle was after Muhammad and ruining things. And Danielle told the reporter Gregoritis, and here I am in this 7-year relationship, but I want Muhammad for myself. Right. And then he added, Lourdes just didn't understand that it wasn't 1983 and she wasn't on the runways. She wasn't the center of attention and she couldn't take it. So in the year before she disappeared, Lourdes seems to spiral even more. First, she'd gotten a job at the Saxon Group in New York City and was excited for this job, but then she learned it paid a fraction of what she thought it did. So she then found a job in an apparel division at a headhunting firm and was making just like $45,000 a year. It also became clearer and clearer that Muhammad might not pan out as a partner, given that her attempts weren't working. So she created a backup plan and decided that she was going to pursue Gene Pressman. And again, I do realize that might not be a recognizable name for to everyone, but Gene was the co-CEO and chairman of Barney's. In fact, his grandfather was the original Barney that gave the store its name.
Okay.
And honestly, it seems really odd to me that Lourdes set her sights on him, given that he was famous for landing Barney's in, like, financial difficulty during the 1990s. And was eventually ousted. So I get the sense he was, like, a bit distracted at the time and might not have the same kind of clout that she was hoping for. But I guess Lourdes even applied for a job as a greeter at Barney's just so that she could run into him, kind of thing.
Okay.
So meanwhile, she was also daydreaming that for some reason, Adnan Khashoggi, so the father of Muhammad, who she's got this intense thing for, would decide to send his son Muhammad to Cuba and that she could then offer her services in assisting on this visit.
So this is absolutely 100% a daydream. This is not anything based on fact, like real life.
I don't get the sense that it is.
Right? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So she's, like, creating this world.
Yeah, I'm not sure to what extent she had any contact, like, in real life with these men. The depth of that did not come up in my research, but, like, basically, like, these constructions of what could happen, right? And as someone who, you know, is a writer and therefore spends a lot of time in my head, yeah, but also, oof.
But also, you don't lose track of reality.
No.
No.
But, yeah.
But you see how that could happen. I know. We all have, like, our thinking things through, like, what could happen.
Right.
But,
like, I spend an intense amount of time daydreaming about a future when I live in Italy, so. But, yeah. But she's placing all these expectations on these people.
Right.
So, all of that is going on in her life, and then her brother moves in with her. So to circle back to earlier, M, as we're calling him, was born 15 years after Lourdes. So there's a significant age gap between them. So while she was in Europe, he was coming of age in Plantation, Florida. Now, much of his early years seem relatively typical, except for the fact that he was competing nationally and internationally in judo.
Hmm.
And perhaps inspired by Lourdes's success, he aspired to get into modeling, but he didn't have the kind of success there that she did, right? So then in 1988, which is the same year that Lourdes came back to the United States to try to build her career in the U.S., M was arrested. Police questioned him when they found him stopped on the side of the road in a station wagon. And when they asked him to step out of the vehicle, they find a crowbar hidden under his shirt. And as they're like trying to assess what's happening there with him, he runs off, dives into a lake trying to elude police.
Who does that?
This guy. They just waited on the other side for him to like emerge.
What?
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, so he ends up being arrested and they connect items in his car and his home to a series of like 20 burglaries in the area.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and he's quite young, but he ends up being charged with armed burglary, burglary, and resisting arrest without violence. Now, this is, it's definitely clear that this secured him in the role as the family problem child.
Mm-hmm.
And shortly before he moved into Lourdes, he was arrested on a marijuana charge. But he actually found himself on Lourdes's doorstep after his roommate, who was an elderly man who had been his benefactor, died.
Whew. Okay, so he's gone to live with Lourdes.
Yes.
Okay.
So he can't or won't return to Florida to live with their surviving parent, their mom, right?
Okay.
Because at this point, their dad had passed away. So
it was just mom and them.
Yeah. So at this point, Lourdes is working this $45,000 a year job. She's paying $1,500 a month for her fourth floor walk up. It's not a big apartment. It's like 500 square feet. She actually doesn't have much furnishings in there because like her disposable income is going to pay for like clothes and dry cleaning and all that. So M moves in and he's not paying any rent. He's sleeping on her couch. And Lourdes is actually used to helping her brother out. Apparently, she sent him money in the past, but that's a lot different than having him, like, there,
mm-hmm.
moved in with you. And he says he's going to get a job and a new place to live, and he's supposed to be out in a few weeks, but he just, like, doesn't do that.
Okay, so she's struggling, and her brother's living there and not contributing.
Right. And so friends say that Lourdes had told them that M had a terrifying temper. And that the two argued about his inability to find a job or a new place. So it's clear like she's getting frustrated with him and this situation. Danielle, her friend, said, "I've heard her talk of her brother as an opportunist type of guy. She always dismissed him as her crazy brother. She thought he was always involved in some sort of scandal or scheme." So that takes us up to October 13th, 2000. Lourdes was due to pick up her paycheck from her job at the headhunting firm. And one of her friends there noted that it seemed strange that she didn't. But it wasn't until 2 weeks later, when no one had seen her, the check is still there, that they reported her missing.
2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
That's...
Until finally someone was like, wait a minute. So when police go to investigate, they go to her apartment and they find her brother, M, there. He's literally sitting on a white chair eating Cheetos. It's just like criminal on its own, right?
Who does that, right?
Don't do that. If what he says is true, he's the last person to see her alive. He says that he saw her on October 14th after she returned from the gym. Like, Lourdes really was a fan of the stationary bike. And so when she got back to the apartment, she said that she had a job in Europe and would be leaving immediately. And she packed a green and black duffel bag before going downstairs and getting in a cab. Now, there's a lot wrong with this story. For one, Lourdes let her passport expire in 1988 when she returned to New York from Europe, so she couldn't have traveled to Europe. Second, this would have been highly unusual for Lourdes. Her mom said, "She would never do that without telling me. We talk to each other once a week. I think she would tell me."
Also, she didn't pick up her check.
Also, she didn't pick up her check, right? Which Danielle, her friend, said, like, there's no way that girl would have left, like, a penny without picking it up, right? Scott Brooks, who she worked for at John Anthony, said it's not like her to just go away with that. She's a Virgo, very responsible and methodical. And her friend Danielle said, job opportunity, what job opportunity was there for a 46-year-old model in Europe? So because of statements like that, because of her passport, and because of M's past, he's quickly a suspect in Lourdes' disappearance. Their mother told the New York Post, I love my son and my daughter, but I can't say that my son had nothing to do with that.
Wow.
And M's actions following Lourdes' disappearance aren't helping avoid suspicion. So it's not unusual that he did start sleeping in Lourdes' bed after he claimed she left. Like, after all, who wants to sleep on the couch if there's, like, a free bed? But it is strange that he threw the couch away.
That is weird.
Yeah, so he tells police that Lourdes had asked him to move it to the curb because a new one was coming, so he did that. The strange thing is that there's, like, no new couch ever arrived, and the police were unable to trace this missing couch.
Okay. Yeah, the couch thing is really weird. I mean, and his own mom is like, wouldn't doubt it.
Yeah. Now, also, Lourdes's modeling book was stuffed under the kitchen sink. So if she had gone to Europe, she would have taken this. And it's also strange to shove, like, what is an expensive and an important document to a model's life, like, under a sink, right?
Yeah.
And so the police, they spray the apartment with luminol, but they don't find evidence that Lourdes was murdered inside the apartment. Eventually, they do move on from M being a suspect, with one detective saying, is it weird that your sister disappears and you move around her stuff? Maybe even throw stuff out? Yes. Is it a crime? No.
But it probably is.
Well, yeah, so...
It might not be, but it might be.
Well, he's never been charged with a crime, and police did move on from him as a suspect.
Really? Okay, so he's not actually...
No. So they end up... They just think, like, basically he's a weird guy.
So what do they think happened to her?
Well, they're not sure. So they search New York's Yorkville neighborhood, the nearby Carl Schurz Park. They even look for her in the East River. But, like, the detectives end up saying, at this point, we get nothing. Total mystery. And that really seems to be where they've left it.
This one's too hard. Pass.
Pass, basically, yeah. So over years, of course, there's been, like, many thoughts on what could have happened to Lourdes, from trafficking to death by suicide to murder to running away to start a new life. So I think every theory has been mentioned, but it's clear that she did have a complex and complicated life, that she had these complicated relationships with her loved ones. She was loved by her friends, but they also saw the dark sides. Yeah. It's a lot.
It's a complicated thing. Yes.
Yeah. And yeah, this is a woman whose value was measured in youth and beauty. And, like, those things are changing for her, right? So I want to end with, though, what her mother said about Lourdes, because I think this is a good reminder. She said, she is the kind of daughter I would say any mother would love to have. At the St. Regis Hotel Bar, Lourdes Gruart, 46, missing since October 14th, 2000, from New York City, New York. Perhaps you're still perched on a bar stool every night, like those champagne nights in Milan, Paris, Tokyo, except without the dancing and the playboys prowling, the clubs, everyone dizzy and restless under the lights, and the endless beat of music that rattled through your breastbone until it felt like the ache of love. Perhaps you're still twisting your glass under Astor's gaze, still fierce, still draped in black like a vengeful swan. Those nights linger. One more glass of champagne, not a morsel of food until you go back to your walk up, four stories up where you light a yellow candle, pull a tarot card from the deck. Perhaps you're still calling home, where for a moment you're back on the pastel streets of your girlhood, a place you were always hungry for life. A friend says that you didn't understand that it wasn't 1983,
but when you ran your hand along your softening jaw, you could feel the years that had passed since you stalked the runway. The last time your heart beat its rebellious metronome.
For more information about our show or to check out other shows on the network, please visit evergreenpodcast.com. Bye, Vanessa.
Bye, Amy.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woo-hoo! Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 15th through the 28th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.